The Retirement and IRA Show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested in directly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Salnier and Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor.
This is the Retirement and IRA Show coming to you from beautiful Northern Colorado. Join us as certified financial planner Jim Salnier, as well as Colorado State University finance instructor and certified financial planner Chris Stein, teach you about IRAs, 401ks, annuities, Social Security, pension plans, and estate planning in a fun and enjoyable show. Whether you are listening live in Colorado or streaming from their website or iTunes podcast, Jim and Chris want you to know that they're available to help you plan for your retirement. Just visit their website at jimhelps.com. That's Jim, H-E-L-P-S.com. And click the Meet the Team button on the homepage. Now, here's Jim and Chris with today's show.
Welcome to the Retirement and IRA Show EDU edition this week. Topic for this week, we're going to dig into the IRS guidance or ideas surrounding RMDs and the SECURE Act. SECURE Act isn't super new at this point. It's been around for a while, but they're still clarifying and nailing down what they're going to enforce as far as RMD rules. So we're going to start to take a look at that over at least this show, if not a few coming shows, because this we get deep in the weeds on some of this stuff, and there's this, that, and the other exception, and these rules are not for the faint of heart, if you will. So I've got Jim. He's got fresh info back from the Ed Slott program. He just went to his biannual Ed Slott training and has got a lot of juicy information. We rely on them a lot to interpret this mess that comes out of the IRS and Congress. It's kind of a team effort. And they provide us with some good information. We're going to try to summarize it for you.
Yes, we are. Welcome, everybody, to the EDU show of the Retirement and IRA Show. And today is actually going to be the easiest, I think. I think there's going to be three in a row EDU shows to adequately cover all this.
We're not going to do a five-part series?
No more five-part.
That seems to be our forte.
That does seem to be a five-part series. Depends. It depends how deep, Chris, you go. Because, I mean, everyone knows you're going to go on and on and on down these rabbit holes, rambling and never shutting up. If you go that far, maybe it will go five shows, whatever they are. But if I keep you on track,
okay.
If I keep you very pithy like me.
We'll try to keep it tight.
Pithy, to the point. Don't repeat yourself over and over again in an effort for people to understand it.
Okay.
Just stick to the task at hand. We might do this in three shows.
Okay. I'll do my best.
That's my goal. My goal is to keep you on track to do it in three shows. Okay. The good news, folks, today's show is actually going to be the easiest of the three. And what we want to cover is the 275-page proposed regulations that the IRS issued recently on how required minimum distributions from IRAs will work. It gets incredibly complex and confusing. It really does. I do not think they made it easier at all. You be the judge, people listening and Chris, if these are easier than the old rules, but I don't think they are. And we're going to cover most of the rules, hopefully in three shows, to give you kind of a working idea of what they're going to be. I know a lot of people are saying these are proposed, we don't have to follow them. I do feel, and Ed from the Ed Slott group did kind of drill into our heads that we should be looking at these proposed regulations and acting upon them now, even though they are not the final recommendations or regulations, if you will. He did point out, and I don't know the exact days we did it on that Things That Make You Go Hmm show with the Ed Slott group, where after the 1986 tax law change, the final RMD rules didn't come out to the early, was it 2001? It was like 15 or 17 years later. Yeah. It was just this outrageously long period of time before they really got the final RMD rules established. So Ed thinks it's safe and probably recommended to act upon the proposed regulations and not keep doing things the way we thought the IRS was going to make the regulations. That's his recommendation, and it would be my recommendation to anyone listening. Don't feel you need to know all this, you do-it-yourselfers. It's only going to matter after you inherit an IRA or someone inherits your IRA. Doesn't really matter before then. So don't go crazy trying to remember every single nuance, every single rule. I think the general takeaway you should gather from this is, hey, these are complicated. Mm-hmm. If something happens, I know you're a do-it-yourselfer and you loathe going to someone for advice, but you may need to, or you're going to be able to say, if you're the one who passes away, leave a note, hey, go to someone to help you understand these rules. But I don't think you need to stress over them. And I feel, folks, these are going to change yet again at some point during your life.
Well, the good news is the RMDs for your own accounts that you built up over time and that you now are forced to take the RMDs, those are still pretty darn straightforward. It's really inherited accounts only. So it's not everyone with RMDs that are going to have a bunch of issues. They've made some tweaks. We've got new RMD or life expectancy tables that are being used that people need to be aware of if you aren't already. But you know, the big uproar, if you will, is all with these inherited IRAs. That's where things just suddenly got way messier than they were before, in my opinion. I don't think they've gotten better, if you want to, you know, hear my opinion. I know enough just to know that I dislike the direction they're going.
And so, sitting on the horizon, folks, is Secure Act 2.
Yeah.
Which will most likely mess up these rules yet again.
Yeah.
So do recognize Secure Act 2 is out there. I think there's a very strong case it'll pass at some point this year. And for everybody excited because they keep hearing RMDs are being pushed out to 75, it's not right away. It's going to take, I think, 11 or 12 years to get to 75. It'll hit 73 right away, and then eventually 74, and then eventually, I think 10 or 11 years from now, 75. So they are pushing RMDs out. That's really not going to help much, though. Just because, and we said this before, and I'm not trying to go down a rabbit hole, but just because you could delay to 75 someday doesn't mean you're going to want to, because you're just going to leave a bigger IRA of all taxable money to someone who's going to have to deal with it in a very unbeneficial manner, especially with the RMD rules that are coming out. So even though they might extend RMDs under Secure 2, from a tax planning perspective, you may not want to do that. So anyways, keep that in mind. Mm-hmm. But Let's talk about a few things. Everything I'm going to go over is post-Secure Act. Now, Secure Act stood for Setting Every Retirement Up, S-E-C-U, Setting Every Community. Up
yeah.
for retirement. Retirement. What was the E?
I didn't know there was going to be a quiz at the beginning here.
Setting Every Retirement Up.
For retirement enhancement. It's okay. Enhancement.
Setting every community up for retirement enhancement.
Yeah.
That's what it's supposed to mean. Is there any word that begins with an E that means confusion? Seriously. I don't have what word in front of me. Type in.
I'll look for one while you're going after it. And then that'll be our version of secure.
Yes, that's our version of secure. There should be an E word that means confusion. Because it should be setting every community up for retirement confusion. That's what they should call this. Because they haven't made these rules easy. Now, these rules are going to apply for everyone inheriting an IRA after January 1st of 2020. So the good news is, for all of you who already have an inherited IRA from a decedent who passed away before January 1st of 2020, you can stretch that old rule of being able to stretch the IRA payments out over your lifetime. You can keep doing that. Nothing changes what you have. The only thing that will change is the single life table that you will have to use, not because of Secure, but because this year, 2022, is when the new life expectancy tables came out. So you will have to go back, recalculate what your stretched IRA lifetime payments are, but you can continue taking payments from that IRA, required minimum distributions from that IRA, over your remaining life expectancy. Nothing changes for you. What changes is what will happen after you die. After you die under Secure, your rules have changed. And for everyone inheriting an IRA post January 1st of 2020, the rules have dramatically changed and have become very confusing, even more confusing than they used to be.
Yeah. So here's our version of the Secure
acronym. You got one already.
Okay. I've got one, I think, that'll work here. It's setting every community up for retirement entanglement.
Entanglement.
It's the only E that's somewhat
related
to
that means
confusing
confusion
or chaotic or whatever.
That's okay until we find a better word.
Okay. Yeah, there's a lot of synonyms for confusing, but none with an E.
Yeah, that would be a tough one, I suppose. Yeah.
I'll keep looking.
Okay, no problem.
I'll give me something to do while you're talking.
Well, you got to pay attention because I'm going to pass it off to you.
Are you
going to
just randomly give me, just stop talking and say, take it over?
Absolutely, take it over, Chris. I need a break.
I didn't go to the Ed Slott training.
I need to take a swig of water.
You're the source.
No, you haven't. No, but some of this you know already, but some of it you may not have.
Okay.
But again, back to the original thing, as I was saying, Chris, people who inherited an IRA before January 1st of 2020, your rules haven't changed. But I briefly said, people who inherit that IRA after you die, their rules have changed. And it has, and it's quite easy. So let's just knock this one off the table. This one is really easy. In the past, folks, pre-Secure, let's say you inherited an IRA in your 50s and you could stretch it for 30 more years. If you died 10 years into it, your successor beneficiaries, that's what a person who inherits an IRA that has already been inherited, they are known as successor beneficiaries. You could have named a successor beneficiary who would have stepped in and could continue under your payout schedule, folks, for another 20 years in my example. I said you had 30 years to go and you died 10 years into it. Someone else can step in and keep it going for 20 more years under the same schedule. And if they died 15 years into it and left it to another successor beneficiary, that person could step in and keep it going for the remaining 5 years. So when the stretch was set, that IRA could stay for that length of time. But under Secure, even with an IRA that was inherited pre-Secure, the successor beneficiary is under Secure. And that rule is quite simple. Any IRA that is currently being stretched, once it's inherited by a successor beneficiary, the 10-year rule applies. Mm-hmm. And that IRA can only last 10 years. So that one's a little bit more straightforward.
Yeah, and maybe I'll chime in occasionally just to kind of add some color, if you will. How concerning is this going to be? You know, having a successor beneficiary having to distribute within 10 years, is it really going to shorten up the distribution overall length of many people? Probably not that many, honestly. I mean, so as far as things to be concerned about, the potential shortening here, you gave an extreme example where the original beneficiary had a lifespan of 30 years. So that was a very young, pretty darn young.
That would have been someone in their 50s, early 50s.
Early 50s, yeah. Early 50s. And then they lived for a while. And, if they lived till they're 70, then the successor would have had 10 years anyway. So that's my point, is it's not, you know, that many people where the beneficiary dies at a young age, then handing it off to the successor. They could have, under the old rules, had a really long time, and now it's only 10. I think the number of people that fall into that category, because as you and I both know, most beneficiaries end up taking the IRA, distributing it much faster than the RMDs anyway on the stretch. You know, most people, we would joke around, were, you know, no, just give it all to me now kind of a thing. We're having to warn them of the tax ramifications of that because their inclination was, I got all these plans and I want the money much sooner than later. So as far as the effect on the whole system goes, I don't know that there's going to be tons of people that are going to be really trapped in this limitation. That's just my personal
opinion.
There'll
be some.
There'll be some, but it's not like every person is going to be affected drastically by
this.
True.
Now, let me take a few issues off the table with this as well. And this is the easy one. Wait till we get to the hard parts. In the same scenario I had, folks, pre-Secure Act, a 50-year-old inherits an IRA, can stretch it for 30 years. We're just making these numbers up. Can stretch it for about, and although someone 50 could have under the old rule stretched for about 30-plus years. So they're stretching for 30 years. They die 10 years into it, say. And someone else inherits it. They can no longer keep it going for 20. They have 10 years. What if they die 9 years into it and left it to another successor beneficiary? A new 10-year does not begin.
Right. There's only one 10-year
now. So no matter how many successor beneficiaries come after that successor beneficiary, it's only staying open for 10 years.
They essentially put a hard deadline on the distributions of these things. Once it hits a successor, it shall be closed within 10 years. There's no expanding that number. They've now kind of put a flag in the ground saying this, you know, thou shall not pass right here. This is it. You got 10 years max after this, and nothing is going to change that.
Now, one other thing before we just wrap up this, people who still have pre-Secure Act IRAs, one thing that just popped into my head, and I'm going to say it, and I'm going to admit, I don't know the answer. I'm going to have to get a hold of the EdSlot group or do some research. We've got 130-something pages, a workbook on this. It'd be a hell of a lot easier for me to just call them and ask. But what about this scenario, Chris? Maybe you know the answer or not. What if, back to the 50-year-old who could keep it open for 30 years. Mm-hmm. I keep saying they died 10 years into it. What if they died 25 years into it? There's only 5 years to go. Mm-hmm. Under Secure Act and into the proposed regulations, the IRS started referencing, not a new acronym. Apparently, this has been an acronym in the IRC, the Internal Revenue Code, for a long time, Ed said. It just was never really applied. It's called ALAH. ALAL. ALAL. How would you pronounce that? ALAL?
Sure.
ALAL. Not AL. AT. No, AL. I was right. AL. Mm-hmm. At least as long.
Right.
And they keep referencing ALAL, I guess is how you would pronounce it. At least as long. And that is the whole basis they predicated their RMDs must be taken between year 1 and 9 in certain circumstances under the 10-year rule when we didn't think they would need to be taken because they aren't taken under the 5-year rule. The IRS said, no, we're basing this off of ALAR, the concept that means at least as long. So knowing that ALAL matters in the scenario I just described, Chris, do you think that successor beneficiary, when there was only 5 years of stretch left, could keep it for 10 years? Or do you think they're going to have to close it in 5, at least as long?
See, a while back, I thought I read a specific hypothetical of that, and their claim was you would get the 10 years. It would actually stretch it beyond, effectively, not to use the word stretch inappropriately, but it would allow you to keep that or the successor to keep it open longer than they would have under the old rules. It was actually an example.
An enhancement.
Now, this was a few months ago, and maybe with the new IRS guidance, where this came from, and I can't quote it because you just kind of sprung this on me, where it came from, but I usually kind of restrict my readings on this to people I respect, so I think this was coming from someone of general authority. At least a few months ago, their belief was that they would get the 10, but you know, this was, I think, before this IRS guidance stuff had been released.
Okay. We'll look into that, folks, and get back to you on that. But at least as long is very important concept to remember under the new proposed regulations. And it's the basis of how the IRS is defending having to take RMDs between year 1 and 9 in certain circumstances. Okay, so that was kind of a little digression. What we're going to do today, we're not going to get into actual examples. In order for you to understand the distribution rules, you must understand the three classes of beneficiaries that there can now be on an inherited IRA. Pre-Secure Act, there were only two classes of beneficiaries. Post-Secure Act, there are now three. And they're so close in name sounding, they're extremely confusing. Pre-Secure Act, there was a beneficiary and a designated beneficiary. Right. And Chris and I used to always say, anyone or anything can be a beneficiary. You could name an estate, a trust, a charity, a dog, a tree, a person, as a beneficiary of an IRA. Anything could be a beneficiary of an IRA. To be a designated beneficiary, you need it to be human and have a pulse.
Right. Human and alive.
But now there are three classes. So we're going to go over the three classes of beneficiaries because the RMD rules are different for all three at different times. This is what gets so confusing. One class of beneficiary has one rule depending on when the IRA owner died, and that same class of beneficiary with the same IRA owner has a totally different rule if the IRA owner dies at a different time. It's amazingly confusing. But to begin, we're just going to cover today the three types of beneficiaries and some clarification the IRS gave in the proposed regulations that differs from what people thought. Now, Chris and I did a show on these beneficiaries several years ago now, so longtime listeners may have heard it, but there's some new clarification in the proposed rules. So we're going to talk about the three classes today. That's it. And then we'll get into examples. That's the best way to teach this, is to, rather than just spout facts, I'm going to create hypothetical scenarios and walk everyone through on how this is going to work. So what are the three classes of beneficiaries? Well, really, it begins. You can have, I like to do them from number three to number one. It just seems to make sense rather than the way they're always listed. So if you're listening to me, I kind of start at the bottom of the typical list. And it is an eligible designated beneficiary, a non-eligible designated beneficiary, and a non-designated beneficiary. Very crystal clear, right, Chris? I mean, those aren't confusing terms at all. You can clearly see where one ends and the other begins.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Okay, yeah. Let me make this easy for you folks. And I said this years ago when this first came out. Where you see the two words, designated beneficiary, knock those out and replace it with the word human. That's it.
That's a good way to think of it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, and I have to do it this way. Whenever I see the word designated beneficiary, it just confuses the hell out of me. Get rid of it and call it what it is, a human.
Well,
it is.
The only little issue I have with that is you can have trusts that are treated as humans. So that might confuse a few people in the cases where certain trusts can
True.
Be treated
Some
as
Some trusts can be treated a as a human.
Thing. Right.
I will concur with that. But I personally find it easy, folks, to get rid of the words designated beneficiary and just replace it with human.
And just realize in the background, kind of the subtitle to that or the footnote is, by the way, in certain circumstances, some trusts can be treated as humans.
We can
just think of it as on the side like that.
Trusts are like the vowel Y. Sometimes why.
Yeah, and sometimes, yes, good point.
So sometimes trusts.
Yeah.
Because not every trust
right.
can be a designated beneficiary or human, quote unquote.
Right.
So we have A, E, I, O, U, and sometimes Y.
Yep.
But we have and sometimes trusts. So let's just try this again and tell me if this sounds a little more clear to you folks. We have an eligible human, a non-eligible human, and a non-human. Is that a little easier to understand? I think it is. So I always replace designated beneficiary with the word human. Okay, so what does this all mean in English? Well, an eligible human, otherwise known as an eligible designated beneficiary, or you'll see its initials often, EDB, just put EH instead, eligible human, as the name implies, folks, is a human and sometimes trust, there's that Y, is a human that is eligible for what, Chris? The old stretch.
The stretch, yeah.
The old stretch. Under the old rules, under the pre-Secure Act, pre-January 1st of 2000 rules, there are some people who still get to stretch. So you hear a lot, the stretch IRA is died. It has died, but it's not really dead. It's lingering. Its spirit is still there. Some people can still use it. It's not fully dead. It's like we played after my stroke, that sound effect. I'm not dead yet. Remember that not dead Python. Fred is the little snippet's name. So if the stretch could talk, it would be saying, I'm not dead yet. I can't do an English accent like they can in Monty Python. Oh, well. That's anyways, okay. What do we mean it's not dead yet? Some people can stretch. The people who can stretch are eligible humans, otherwise known as eligible designated beneficiaries. Who or what is an eligible human? Well, surviving spouses are an eligible human. Mm-hmm. They can still stretch, and they can also treat the IRA as their own. And we'll talk about this in the examples. We're not getting it to today, but a spouse can stretch. We know that.
Yeah. Plus, they get that special spouse carve-out.
Mm-hmm. Correct. That they can
treat
it as their own or move it into their own. They can do both. So we have a spouse. Minor children of the decedent, but not grandchildren.
Right.
Just minor children of the decedent. And now Secure gives us more guidance. So let me pause there. Now these proposed regulations give us more guidance. Prior to the proposed regulations, the rule was minor children up to the age of majority. That's how Congress wrote it. Well, the IRS realized that can be confusing. So in a stroke of brilliance, which was sorely lacking in the majority of these proposed regulations, but in a stroke of brilliance to make this easy, the IRS said, this is nuts. Some states it's 18, some it's 21, some it's 26 if they're still in college. Impossible, I think, for the IRS to ever figure out what kids should be taking a distribution or not. So they said up until age 21. No matter who you are, no matter what state you live in, you will be an eligible human to stretch or an eligible designated beneficiary up until age 21.
Yeah, a type of stretch.
It would be the old rules. You go to the old rules and you quote unquote stretch it, but only to 21.
Right.
At 21, the 10-year rule applies.
Right.
And that IRA must be closed by time you're 31. So this is important for all you do-it-yourselfers. The longest your minor children will be able to keep the longest that a minor child can keep your IRA open before being forced to close it and pay taxes on the whole thing is age 31. That's it, 31. The IRS is setting it right there. As long as that minor child doesn't qualify for any other stretch, which you'll see there is one other way, and you certainly don't want your child to qualify for this, but there is a way that that minor child may be able to stretch it longer, and it's not a good one. Every minor child will have to close their inherited IRA fully at age 31. There is no way that's ever going to stay open longer. Okay, so that's a minor child. So a minor child is an eligible human. Another eligible human, and again, this is would apply to a minor child as well as others, and we certainly hope it doesn't fit your situation, but if it did, disabled individuals under strict IRS rules, but disabled individuals. So if your minor child was legitimately disabled under the strict IRS rules, that minor child is now an eligible human or an eligible designated beneficiary longer than age 21, which is the oldest a minor child can stretch under the old rules. A disabled child can stretch for the rest of their life. So that is a special carve-out, if you will, for disabled children. Do you have anything you want to add on that, Chris?
No.
Okay. No. All right. As I said, the definition, though, of disabled child, they did add clarity to this in the proposed regulations. And Ed shared, and I wrote down what he was saying, this definition may be difficult to apply for many children. So he quotes in his writing to us, it says, the individual has a medically determinable physical or mental impairment that results in marked and severe functional limitations, and that can be expected to result in death, ought to be of long and continued and indefinite duration. So just saying my child is a spendthrift problem, or my child does have a disability, they can't manage their money well, that is not enough to get the stretch. That is a very strict definition they built into the proposed regulations. Capiche?
Yep.
Okay. There is another, as Ed said, safe harbor. If you are declared disabled by Social Security, you're automatically disabled for purposes of being an eligible human or eligible designated beneficiary. So you can leave it to someone, and if that person is receiving Social Security disability, the IRS will assume them to pass their test, and that person can stretch. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
All righty. So we have minor children, as I already said, up until age 21. Disabled individuals are also an eligible human or eligible designated beneficiary. Chronically ill individuals can satisfy that. What is a chronically ill individual? They're the Congress and the IRS went to the IRC code and are using the very definition under qualifying for LTC insurance. They cannot be able to do 2 of 6 activities of daily living. And if they are passing that measure, if there is a medical doctor who will sign off on that, that these people can't do 2 of 6 activities of daily living. And those are the same rules to qualify for long-term care insurance. So again, to follow what these 6 activities of daily living are, I just ask you to imagine yourself laying in bed and then follow what you do in the morning. Can you get out of bed by yourself? Yes or no? If there's no, there's 1. Can you move from your bed to the bathroom? It's 2. Number 3, can you control yourself, your continence, and keep from going before you get to the bathroom? Yes or no? That's number 3. Number 4, can you actually use the bathroom yourself and toilet, get on and off yourself? Can you then clean yourself? Can you bathe? And then number 6, can you eat? It's pretty much what you do every morning. Can you do all of those without any help, or do you need help? And as soon as you need help doing 2 of those, you will qualify for LTC, and as well as cognitive impairment. I forgot to put that one in there. So this,
and that's not one of the six. That's a standalone.
Yes, that's you always get that if you are cognitively impaired. Okay, so chronically ill. Those people can also stretch over their lifetime. But sadly, that to me is a non-issue. Yeah. Few of those people would live more than 10 years anyways.
Right.
When you can't do two of six activities of daily living, short of someone who is relatively young, who is in a horrendous accident and is now paralyzed, maybe from the waist down or from the neck down, but still expected to live 15, 20, 25 years or more, yes, those people could stretch. But if it's an elderly person who may have 3, 4, 5, 6 years of this or less than a year, I mean, whether they take it out over 10 years or quote-unquote stretches is, I don't think, an issue. But there's a very small, I think, category of people where this would be of any type of benefit. And someone with that much of an impairment would most likely need, Chris, that money a lot faster than stretching it out over their lifetime anyways. Mm-hmm. So a lot of this, I think, is much to do about nothing. But again, we're just trying to go through the rules of who is eligible to stretch. Because next week, when we get into this, I'm only going to be talking an eligible human, otherwise known as an eligible designated beneficiary, and not getting into explaining it. This is what this show is for. And the final category is an individual not more than 10 years younger. This can be confusing, but not more than 10 years younger than the IRA owner. So it's pretty much looking for siblings, something mm-hmm. like that, or a parent.
Cousin or somebody, yeah.
A parent is not more than 10 True. Years younger than you. So you could give your IRA to your parent and they could stretch it out. A sibling who's within 1, 2, 3, 4 years of you, not many brothers and sisters are more than 10 years apart in their age. But anyone older than you or not more than 10 years younger than you. So you could leave it to your best friend who might be older than you. You could leave it to your favorite podcast host who may be older than you. And they could stretch it out. Mm-hmm. But if your favorite podcast host or friend was more than 10 years younger than you, they won't be able to stretch it out.
Right.
Now, they did add a little bit of clarity to this, Chris. So I'll put you on the spot to make a Uh-oh. Guess. Do you use the actual birthday or do you use just the year of birth when determining 10 years? Do we have the Jeopardy tune?
I think it's the year of, just the year.
You're going to lose because you didn't go, what is oh. the year of Alex?
You're not Alex. May he rest in peace.
I don't have a buzz out
the
of
the actual birthday?
Effects. Actual birthday. You go birthday to birthday.
Hmm.
They clarified that in the proposed regulations. Birthday to birthday. I would figure year and year. It was a hell of a lot mm-hmm. easier, but no, yeah. we're going to go birthday to birthday. So now there's going to be math involved.
That's mean. And it will differ depending on, you know, how early in the year you were born and stuff like that. It's, yeah.
Birthday to birthday.
Great.
Again, I don't write the rules. I only follow them. Okay, see if there was any other clarifications that I want to use. Here's one that I think they borrowed from trust rules, but I think this can cause future pain unnecessarily. Going back to a chronically ill or disabled person. Now, the definitions are very strict on disabled person, as we read, and chronically ill is two of six activities of daily living. But get a load of this, Chris. To qualify as eligible humans, otherwise known as eligible designated beneficiaries, both disabled or chronically ill individuals must provide documentation of their disability or illness to the IRA custodian no later than October 31st of the year following the IRA owner's death or the stretches lost. How many people are going to remember that and get screwed over by that?
Most of these rules are set up, I think, almost for failure, for people to mess it up. I think they're being mean, honestly. I think a lot of this stuff, they should have taken into consideration simplicity of execution and let that sway them when they were looking at, well, should we go this direction or should we go this direction? And I think they completely ignore the difficulty of application and people to follow the rules. That's just what it seems like to me. It's like that's completely not part of their priority list. Or if it is, it's way too far down the list. But anyway.
And it gets worse.
Yeah.
The certification on chronic illness cannot come from the beneficiaries. It has to come from a licensed healthcare practitioner.
Hmm.
So where does this all leave everybody? It leaves things unnecessarily confusing. One of the things that Chris and I, and the reason I said, folks, that this came from trusts, if you've listened to his show repeatedly, you know Chris and I are not fans of trust being beneficiary of an IRA, but we recognize there are times when you want it. And we point out to everyone, if you're going to do that, make sure your trust or your trustee follows your trust and or trustee follows a few sets of rules. And we used to always say the rules are quite simple. The trust must be legal under state law, irrevocable after death. Beneficiaries must be immediately identifiable. And the fourth was a copy of the trust must be delivered to the IRA custodian by October 31st of the year following the IRA owner's death. And I warned most trusts that are going to blow up and not be allowed to be beneficiary of an IRA are blown up not by the legal under state law, immediately identifiable beneficiaries and irrevocability after death. It's because the trustee or the executor of the estate never get a copy of the trust to the IRA custodian. Now we're going to have situations where people helping to care for chronically ill patients or disabled children have to remember to get a copy and proof of this to the IRA custodian by October 31st, or they're not going to be able to stretch and now they're under some 10-year rule. It just, see what I mean, Chris? Confusion. Unnecessarily.
Totally. I think so, too. That's that whole, let's ignore any sort of simplicity or ability for people to follow these rules and just expect them to jump through all the hoops, no matter how convoluted. It's just mean. The IRS is just mean.
Okay, folks. So those five classes of people, again, are called eligible designated beneficiaries under the rule, under the law, in the act, by the IRS. I'm telling you, just call them eligible humans. Whenever you see the words designated beneficiary, think human. These are an eligible human who can stretch. And then there's sometimes why. Some trusts will qualify as being an eligible designated beneficiary. We'll get into that on future shows. So you might have a case where now, beneficiaries of that trust must be human to get it to qualify, to get the long stretch, as you'll learn. But a trust sometimes, if done right, can qualify as an eligible designated beneficiary or eligible human. There are two other classes of beneficiaries. Remember, there's the non-eligible designated beneficiary, or often in, you'll see, NEDB, as if that is easy to understand. Just remember, there's non-humans. So what is, non-eligible humans, not a non-human. A non-eligible human, that says it all. It's a human who's not eligible to stretch.
Hmm.
That's the 10-year rule. Those people, those humans, have to follow the 10-year rule. So it's a non-eligible human. It's a human who's not eligible to stretch. Very simple. If you just get rid of the damn word designated beneficiary and put human in and then read what it says, non-eligible human, they must use, folks, the 10-year rule. But here's where it's going to get tricky, and we'll get into this deeper next week. Depending on when the IRA owner died, and depending on the type of IRA, traditional or Roth, those non-eligible humans might have to take RMDs for the first 9 years, or might not have to take RMDs for the first 9 years.
I hate might. Might just bothers me. I want it to be one way or the other. I hate this might.
You've got four potential outcomes. You have a traditional IRA with someone who dies at a certain time, a traditional IRA who doesn't die at a certain time, a Roth IRA who dies at a certain time, and a Roth IRA who doesn't die at a certain time. You got four potential outcomes depending on when the IRA owner died and the type of IRA he or she had dictates if the non-eligible human, otherwise known as non-eligible designated beneficiary, but a human who's not eligible to stretch, their 10-year rule, do they have to take RMDs from year 1 through 9, or do they take nothing 1 through 9 and have to close it all in 10? That's what it all is. I told you folks, this is not, they have not made this easier. That's why we call SECURE setting every community up for retirement, what?
Entanglement.
Still not sure if anyone out there can think of a better word that begins with E, which means you have got to be blanking kidding me. If you can come up with a word, please send it to me with the title, you know, E word. And we got to find a good word that begins with E that means frickin' ridiculously confusing.
Yep, I agree. Maybe we should just make one up.
Well, I make up words all the time, so... Hell, I'll be the first. If we don't get a good word, I'll make
one up.
Word up.
Yeah, exactly.
But that's nothing hot for me. If you listen to this podcast for a long time, you know I butcher the English language. I freely admit it. Okay, so folks, we're going to get into this deeper, but do remember there are three types of beneficiaries. We've already been through that. You have the eligible humans, otherwise known as eligible designated beneficiaries. They can stretch. You know those five. And sometimes Y, otherwise known as sometimes trusts. Mm-hmm. You guys got that. Then you have the non-eligible designated beneficiaries. That's wicked long to remember. Non-eligible humans. Humans that are not eligible to stretch. But they have to follow a confusing set of rules based not on their age, but the age of the IRA owner when they died and the type of IRA they're inheriting, traditional or Roth. And then we have, which are often the first beneficiaries you ever hear of. I keep them last because I think it should be by people who are eligible to stretch, people who are not eligible to stretch, and then beneficiaries who aren't even people. These are non-designated beneficiaries, and you'll see them referenced as NDBs. Like, that's easy to remember. Replace designated beneficiary folks with human, non-humans. That's pretty straightforward. Those are trusts that do not qualify as being a beneficiary of an IRA. They don't make it as a Y. It's not a sometimes why. They're a trust that doesn't make it. They don't have the right rules. There could be a charity. It could be your estate, which is always a mistake to name your estate, but even more so under these rules. They could be a dog or a tree. We've said that before. There's nothing in the tax code that says you can't name your dog. You just got to follow. Well, you won't because you're dead, but your executor just has to follow the rules when a non-human is beneficiary. Yep. Of the IRA. Well, these, I don't want to say people.
What if it does pay out to your dog? Who pays the taxes?
Most likely the estate, because dogs don't file a tax return. And it'll be under...
That's a question we've never tackled. We always talk about naming your dog or a tree, but
the
if
estate.
You do that...
I mean, come on, the IRS isn't going to...
The IRS is not going to say, well, because it's a dog, they can have it all.
Yeah. What a loophole that yeah, is.
Right, exactly.
I'm going to name my dog as beneficiary of my $2 million IRA. And he's going
to... Has to be paid out in 5 years, but it's tax-free.
Yeah, but in dog years, right. That's a long time.
True.
That's like the dog's whole life. That's a hell of a stretch. No, if you named your dog, and people have named dogs. I don't know if anyone's ever named a tree, but for some reason, I always used to say dog or tree. Maybe because a dog pees on a tree. I don't know. But you could name it. People have named their dog as beneficiary of their IRA. It just goes to the estate. And the estate pays taxes at compressed estate tax rate. So not a good idea to do.
No.
Estates pay taxes at the same rates as trusts, folks. And if you are a longtime listener to this show, you know trusts pay buka income taxes because of those compressed tax brackets. An estate pays the same level of income taxes. So you want to be wise and leave your IRA to your dog. You just left a hell of a lot of money to the to the IRS. Yeah. Because your money in your IRA, folks, we say this all the time, to the IRS, your IRA is IRD. To the Internal Revenue Service, your individual retirement, what's the A, Chris?
Arrangement.
Longtime listeners know that. It's not an account in the eyes of the IRS. It's the individual retirement arrangement, is income with respect to a decedent. The IRS knows you're going to die, hence the name respect to a decedent, but the I in IRD is income. When you look at your IRA, I don't care how many times I have told you this, don't forget, all you do-it-yourself Vanguardians and Fidelians and Schwabians and T. Rowe Priceians, you see assets, the IRS sees income. So if you try to be wise and name a non-human as beneficiary of your IRA, like your dog or a tree, you're essentially going to leave 40 to 50% of that IRA to the IRS in the tax return that the estate's going to end up filing. So don't do it, even though you can. There's nothing in the law that says you can't. The IRS puts them in the non-human category, or they define it as non-designated beneficiaries. Mm-hmm. Non-human. That's it. Non-human. If a non-human inherits an IRA, they might... Oh, it gets really confusing for non-humans, Chris. I mean, it's just nuts. They might have the 5-year rule. They might have the 10-year rule. They might have the 10-year rule with distributions for year 1 through 9, or the 10-year rule with no distributions through year 1 through 9, or they may have to use the life expectancy of the decedent. They threw that one in there too. So it's so wonderfully nice. Confusing. The good news is most non-humans are going to be a charity. And the charity isn't interested, folks, one iota in stretching or the 5-year rule or the 10-year rule or the 10-year rule with RMDs or the ghost life expectancy is what the IRS calls it, the ghost life expectancy of the decedent. No charity is going to leave it open for that. I'll go over the rules with you, but most non-humans who will inherit an IRA is going to be your estate or a charity. If it's your estate, shame on you. You didn't do a good job in naming a human, whether an eligible human or a non-eligible human, but you should always name a human. I have nothing against naming a charity either. Let me make that clear. But the charity, they're not going to care about any of these rules.
Right.
They're just going to say, who is that... The Maverick guy who flies his plane there, Tom Hanks. What was his name? Show me the money. That movie there from the 80s. Wasn't Tom Hanks in it? Tom Cruise.
Yeah.
Show me the money guy.
Mm-hmm.
What movie was it? No, he wasn't even in that. It was another dude, wasn't it?
No, it was in Cuba Gooding Jr.
Yeah, he was the guy who shouted, show me the money, not Tom Hanks.
Yeah, no, but that was the movie.
Okay, but Hanks was not Tom Hanks, what the heck's his name?
Tom Cruise.
Yeah. He was in it, right?
Correct.
Okay, but Cuba Gooding Jr. was the show me the money.
Yes.
Okay, that's what the charity says. Sorry about that little divergence, folks.
Jerry Maguire,
thank you. Mm-hmm. The show me the money guy, that's the charity. They're not going to care about these rules. They're going to say, show me the money.
Because there's no tax ramifications for them.
But your estate might care about these rules based on some of the tax implications. I don't know. But anyways, there's a confusing set of rules, including a ghost life expectancy, that non-designated beneficiaries, otherwise known as non-humans, that they are also going to have to follow. So are you confused yet, Chris?
Well, I'm slightly less confused than some because I've heard this numerous times already, but the first time you hear this, it's extremely confusing.
Absolutely. And then finally, we'll get into, there's a new category that also have to remember for spouses. And I'm going to explain later, but it is actually called the Hypothetical Retroactive Spousal Required Minimum Distribution Rule. If you think I'm making it up, in the Secure Act regs, it's on page 67 to 69, referenced again on page 75, 241, 244, 254, and 255. The IRS is not messing around with this. It is a legitimate rule. The Hypothetical Retroactive Spousal Required Minimum Distribution. You'll see a loophole they thought was a loophole, which technically could have become a loophole. I'll give them that. They tried to squash this before it even happened. So
is this where you marry your dog?
I totally understand why they passed this rule, because I totally, if they didn't pass it, would be telling people to do it. But they actually created yet another rule, the Hypothetical Retroactive Spousal Required Minimum Distribution. Okay, folks, I just wanted to add some clarity, if that was possible, on the three classes of beneficiaries, and on the next two shows, probably, maybe more if Chris keeps going on and on like he did today. On the next two shows, at least, we're going to start using some actual examples to show you what a eligible designated beneficiary, otherwise known as an eligible human, non-eligible designated beneficiaries, or a non-eligible human, and a non-designated beneficiary, or simply a non-human, must follow under the proposed regulations. And then finally, most people are who inherited an IRA in 2020, you most likely will want to take a 2021 RMD this year, as well as a 2022. Because
so getting caught up to get caught for up. Having missed one. Yeah.
If you qualify as having to take an RMD between year 1 and 9, not everyone does.
Yeah.
So wait and listen, figure out if you qualify. Now you might be saying, well, what about 2020, 2021, and 2022? I'm already 3 years into this if I inherited it in 2020. Why don't you have to worry about it in 2020, Chris?
There were no RMDs in 2020.
Exactly. Remember this thing called COVID, and they passed all these silly little rules within days of the first utterance of the word COVID? One of the rules was no RMDs for 2020.
Yep.
So if you inherited an IRA in 2020 as a beneficiary who is ineligible to stretch, you're the non-eligible human, you don't have to worry about 2020. You might have to take one for 2021 and 2022 if you don't qualify for the year 1 through 9 exemption. Listen next week and you'll see how you may or may not qualify. I would also wait until November or December. I still hope and think that the IRS will provide a little bit of guidance on if they expect 2021 to be taken. Ed has told us now that these proposed regulations have come out in 2022, he feels to be safe at least take 2022s, because the IRS is going to expect you to follow the proposed regulations until the final regulations come out. The gray area is 2021. Nobody knew in 2021 they had to take these. Will they give a blanket exception? I don't know. Would they actually subject you to the 50% penalty for not taking it? No, I don't see them doing it at all. So 2021's is going to be a gray area. But if after listening to this show, if you feel you qualify, you might want to start taking your year 1 through 9 RMDs beginning with 2022. Yeah. And if you want to be safe, take 2021's as well.
Yep. Because it is, missing RMDs is the harshest penalty in the tax code. That 50% penalty is egregious. So you're kind of playing with fire if you don't do that.
And Ed was, we great minds think alike. Really? Of course, I'm no Ed Slott.
I wasn't even there, and he didn't even...
But when astute listeners are probably sitting there saying, oh, but Jim, under Secure 2, the 50% penalty goes away to 10%. In a lot of situations, it can be higher depending on the situation. True, but I actually read not the actual act, but I read an article that had the excerpt of the act and was explaining there is no forgiveness on the 10%. And I started thinking, well, wait a minute. Every single case where I have, quote unquote, applied for compassion, as you put, remember, because you're supposed to put on the form reasonable cause, RC. Chris calls it
requesting compassion.
Requesting compassion. Rather than reasonable cause, Chris is right. The IRS has been compassionate, and I had to have done at least a dozen of these in my career. Mm-hmm. No one ever got hit by the 50% penalty. Yeah. Ed specifically mentioned that. He said in all his years, he hasn't seen anyone. It's not to say that they don't. He's never had a client have to pay the 50% penalty either. But Ed said 50% of zero is a lot less than 10% of everything.
Right.
So what sounds like a beneficial tax cut is actually a no compassion. You must pay 10% for every missed RMD.
Mm-hmm. No matter why.
No matter what. There is no compassion on the 10% one under Secure 2. So what sounds like a benefit is actually, to me, a tax increase.
Yeah, I agree.
Okay, so anyways, folks, on the next show, and shows thereafter until Chris and I think we adequately covered it, we're going to start getting into the rules. But rather than just spouting the rules, we're going to do it with a series of actual scenarios, you know, where you just kind of name the person and the dollar amount so you can follow the lineage. You know, Frank died and left his money to Mary, who died and left it to Sally. And you can kind of follow the rationale of how these rules work better with actual examples.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, that was good timing, good intro. Still confusing because everything regarding these new RMD rules and all these beneficiary descriptions and everything are just overly confusing, in my opinion. But I don't run the world, so I don't get to make the rules. We just try to follow them and help you all follow them by describing this, what I think is a mess. But anyway, I'll stop complaining about it. I'm probably sounding like kind of a negative Nelly here. So,
well, it just shows, Chris, why people need to at least have a relationship with a competent advisory firm. And we're not saying us, and as you know, we're not even taking on retirement planning clients until next year. But you need to maintain good relationships. You do it yourself. As I know you love doing things yourself. Try to find a firm or when we reopen or whatever the case may be, maintain, especially if you're married and your spouse is not into this at all, or you're worried your children aren't going to know what to do when you leave everything to them. Have a good relationship and have them monitor and keep up to date on all this. Anyways, I just wanted to throw that out there.
That sounds good. So thanks, Jim, for all dragging all that information back from the slot program, and we'll share with you more next week. Hopefully you find this interesting. This is going to get a little thick, but that's what we're all about on the EDU show. Sometimes they are lighter than this, but this is definitely going to be a series where we're playing around in the weeds a whole lot, and I will encourage Jim, as we prepare for the next show, to have some pretty easy-to-follow examples. So we'll put those together so that we can try to relay this to everyone in the most clear and understandable format possible.
And please send me an E word that means confusing.
Yeah. Confusing, yeah, or messed up. So sounds good.
Foobar.
Yeah, e-foobar.
E-foobar word, yes.
Yeah. So thanks, everybody, for listening. We'll be back next week with a continuation of this topic on a brand new show.
You have listened to Jim on the radio, read his quotes in the media, and enjoyed his banter on iTunes. But even now, you may wonder what sets Jim Salmier and Associates apart from other financial planning companies. The answer is quite simple. Jim's diverse team of professionals specializes in retirement planning. They form a lifelong relationship with you and measure their success not through product sales, but through the security and prosperity you may achieve in your retirement. Jim's entire team shares his unwavering commitment to placing their clients' best interests first while offering their services at fair prices with full disclosures. The professionals at Jim Salmier & Associates are available to assist you with your retirement planning needs. Visit jimhelps.com to schedule your complimentary coffee and a second opinion meeting. That's Jim, H-E-L-P-S.com. Or call 970-530-0556.
The Retirement and IRA Show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested indirectly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Solnier & Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor.